Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We are back in the Billy Meyer case this afternoon, and I've stumbled across another one of Billy's writings. It's about a three-pager that's very profound. It's going to take quite a few readings for me to even begin to wrap my mind around this, but I thought I would share a little bit here at the beginning of the show. It says, "The Source of the Oneness of the Universe," and I put the URL where you can find this. The whole universe is a oneness which flows through all things, all existence, and all life. In this oneness, the human being who has distinct needs is also integrated, whereupon the universal oneness also responds when he or she brings his or her words to expression. So let me try to just begin taking part of this apart so we can figure out what's going on here. The whole universe is a oneness. I remember in one of Billy's passages, he says, everything in the universe is one and it's all bound together. In fact, that may have been Billy's first teacher, Sloth, which told him that. And he also talks about love, wisdom conditioned love, recognizing that all things are kind of related. There's a fragment of whatever that you're looking at is also part of yourself. But when it says the whole universe is a oneness which flows through all things, so this oneness must be some kind of energy that's flowing through material, all existence and all life. In the oneness, the human being has distinct needs and is also integrated. So this oneness recognizes your needs and it responds to your expression, your thoughts and your feelings, and they should be positive. They should be neutral positive. Let me continue here. It responds to the positive thoughts and feelings and to the positive word pronounced, and indeed in an equally directed wise, consequently a positive reaction takes place. However, if the thoughts and feelings and therefore also the words are negative, then a corresponding negative reaction takes place. And that's why the Meyer material is always talking about the need for our thoughts to be neutral positive, and that we should, here it continues, to dwell only in that which is positive, equalized, affirmative, and optimistic, and to encompass and to include the source of the oneness in this wise. Truthfully, it is namely given that when the human being embraces the universal source of the oneness and allows it to bubble up in the good and positive for him / herself, he or she has an unlimited supply of all that is good and valuable of life. So I'm just barely beginning to scratch the surface of that. So we'll have to cover that information in a little more detail later as I continue to chink away at it. If you hear this and you're not sure who Billy Meyer is, he's a man in his late 70s. He lives in Switzerland in a tiny mountain village. It's called Hinterschmidruti. He's had extraterrestrial contact since he was about 5 years old. 11 years of contacts with a man named Sloth. 11 years of contacts with a woman named Asket. 11 years of a normal life. And then his contacts with a woman named Semyase began in the middle 1970s. Let me read a little something from Contact Report 7. And this talks about the history of Earth a little bit. Billy says, "My next question deals with the earthly human races. We have here yellow, red, white, brown, and black people. How does it work with them? Why are there these differing colors?" Semyase tells him, "This actually belongs to the history of Earth humanity. which I still wanted to pass on to you, but I will answer the question for you now, and I can spare myself these remarks later. On Earth, there aren't just the five color races specified by you. It's just that the others are completely unknown to you. In part, they live in places where no human being has been able to find them. Yet partly, and then there's an ellipsis, dot, 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 and then Billy interrupts and says, Billy, do you mean that they live perhaps underground? Such as the assertion is that this is the case in Mexico? Or that they live under domes and inaccessible mountains or inside of hills, about which also incredible things are told? Semyase responds, sure. And here and there, these races also go into the world of the sun and mingle with the surface inhabitants. I have no idea what that means, but we'll continue. That probably could be a translation problem. Particularly in countries with many races, they aren't noticeable and can move around unencumbered, especially if they veil their faces in a nationally traditional way. It is even more difficult when their complexion is very striking. So, for example, bluish, who, and then dot, 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 Billy interrupts, live in the Indian area, yes. There is a race of blue human beings, and my understanding was they were underground. See what Semyase and Billy have to say about this. Semyase says, you know this? Billy says, I have eyes in my head. And Semyase says, of course, but you've outrun me once again. But further, I wanted to say that some differently colored races already became extinct again a long time ago. You know, in some of the traditional Indian paintings, there are a lot of times are blue-skinned people that are depicted, but they are all equally the product of the celestial suns, and the celestial suns are extraterrestrial races. I.e., they were begotten of them, just like the still-existing Earth races. But they are all equally the celestial suns, or star travelers, as you call our ancestors, were native to various planets of stars in another space-time configuration or far away from the solar system. So let me just pause right there, and then I can fill in a little detail. The Plearen are descended from a group of extraterrestrial humans called the Lyrians. Now, when we think of the Lyrians, we're talking about that constellation called Lyra Vega. And it's I think the closest stars are about 30 light years away from here. But the Meyer information explains that not only are there hundreds of billions of stars in our galaxy, but there are different space-time configurations. And that adds an incredible complexity to things. Even the Plearen themselves are not from our space-time configuration. Their star system, the Plearen star system, is 80 light years beyond our Pleiades, but in a different space-time configuration. Now, all that means is they're in a different dimension. Now, explaining that's another story. But these other dimensions, they have planets and stars and solar systems just like ours. And I wonder if we might be able to think of them as somewhat like, almost like our, exactly like the time-space we live in, but like a replica. So maybe you could think of it as multiple replicas of our space-time configuration. So that's speculation on my part. The Meyer material has never elaborated in great detail on that. So anyway, we here on Earth, we are related to these extraterrestrial humans called the Lyrians, who come from a different space-time configuration. The Plearen also are from a different space-time configuration. So let me continue here. In another space-time configuration, or far away from the solar system, where the planets were fundamentally different climactically, consequently, they also produced other races that were able to adapt themselves to the climate from the very beginning. Excuse me. Those who were climactically conditioned also developed suitable skin colors, of whom there are countless ones in the universe. There are just incredible numbers of different colored skin people in the universe. So you see, the universe follows these repeating patterns. Like our DNA is spiral, and then we have a spiral shape in the arms of the galaxy. We have a branching structure in our circulatory system, a branching structure in trees and lightning that strikes. But long and short of it is, what you see in nature on this world will repeat itself again on a world that's in the habitable zone that will produce flora and fauna in human beings. This is what the Meyer material teaches us. So let's continue here. Those who were climactically conditioned also developed suitable skin colors, of whom there are countless ones in the universe. The heights of their bodies were different because, depending on the gravity of the respective planet, they range from only 50 centimeters tall up to several meters. Now, some of these were giants, and I believe in the research that I've done, some of these were close to thirty-five feet tall, some of these very, very large giants. And I would have to go back and look up the particular verses that led me to that. For example, just as a kind of a side note, and I didn't want to get into this soon, but I'll just throw this out here quickly. The Meyer material says Noah, who they call Noah Codnesser, was actually over 10 feet tall. And he did his whole thing more like 100,000 years ago. So the timing of that flood is much later than what's discussed in our Bible. And let me continue here. They were and even are beings that you call giants, colossi, or titans, and such beings also animated the earth. They are witnessed descendants. They also witnessed descendants here, but they were gradually wiped out because they were usually very malicious and exercised tyranny. Some of these giants were incredibly vicious, and they were killed off just because the smaller, normal-sized people could outnumber them. The different races of today are thus descendants of variously colored ancestors who came from different planets of foreign stars. Then the current peoples of the Earth actually weren't solely created on Earth. They aren't also descended from the apes. Semyasi says, "Do you believe then in this ape-human theory?" Billy says, "I'm not stupid. My intellect tells me something different from the crazy brain of Darwin, who set this shower story in the world and fraudulently substantiated it with the distorted ape bones, which has been concealed and kept secret by the responsible persons up to this day." So Master says, "I didn't regard you as stupid." Billy says, "I didn't mean it in such a way. It's just a figure of speech to explain what I feel." So your master says, "Oh, I see. Well, you're right with your view that the people of the earth are not descendants of apes. They were partially begotten by our ancestors, who also mixed themselves with earth beings who were simply called Evas at the time." And if you remember me talking about Atlantis and Lemuria, I often mention the Evas, because the Evas were kind of wild earth humans who were left, boy, this gets muddy. You know, the people from Atlantis and Lemuria were here about 150,000 to 130,000 years ago, about 130,000 years ago when they first came. And there had been other extraterrestrial humans who visited the Earth before then. 150,000 years ago, a man named Pelagon brought a whole lot of people with him, and they settled the Earth and the... Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that again tonight as well. But there were these people here. Every time an extraterrestrial civilization would visit the Earth in the ancient past, build some of these megalithic and monolithic structures like the Great Pyramid, which the Meyer material says 73,000 years old, or some of the other structures, advance a race, develop a civilization, they would wipe each other out in a war. I mean, In the case of Atlantis and Lemuria, the Lemurians actually brought an asteroid in and slammed it into the Earth and caused the great pole shift and almost wiped everything out. So every time civilization gets set back to square one, and the people who are kind of struggling to survive, who are the, you know, the descendants and the children of these higher civilizations, they forget their technology, they forget who they are, and a lot of times they're called the Evas. These are kind of the folks that are left behind. So the Earth has a very complicated, long history of civilizations that go back much, much farther than we understand today. If we had the technology to truly date the stones of the Great Pyramid, and we could learn that it's 73,000 years old with beyond a shadow of a doubt, then we would start to understand that these incredible structures were built by people who had incredible technologies and incredible understanding. There wasn't some kind of trick that people knew 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 years ago that we don't know today. That's not how these were built. They were built by people, architects, designed by architects who were just smarter than we are, more advanced than we are. Now, sometimes there was human labor involved, absolutely. I mean, hundreds and thousands of humans that would just labor by hand to do some of this stuff. But the designs and the understanding involved in this was much, much higher than what we have today. And okay, I've gone way off on a tangent. Let me get back to Contact Report 7. Okay, and then Billy explains that Eva means bearer, or the bearing one, or the bearer. And Semyasa says, sure, but once again, you beat me to it. Semyasa asks, how did you know that? I've also have my head for thinking and for combing. But on the other hand, I also know the Talmud of Emmanuel, somewhat more than just that which still exists in the German language. Now, the Meyer material says there's a writing called the Talmud of Emmanuel, which the Meyer information claims that it was the source document for our whole New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. And the Talmud of Emmanuel was discovered by Billy and Issa Rashid, I think in the 60s. They discovered this ancient scroll. Rashid originally translated much of it, sent the translation to Billy, translated it into German from Aramaic. Issa Rashid was killed. The Mossad was after him because they wanted to squelch this information. Long story short, the Talmud says there was a man on the earth about 2,000 years ago. His name was Emmanuel, and not the figure in our New Testament called Jesus Christ. And it's interesting, but I did a little research on this myself, and I'm digressing heavily again. But the letter J, from what I've been able to tell, really didn't exist in the ancient world. There was no, so all the people that we know from history, when the letter J, right around 1550, when the letter J was invented for the German, French, and the English, we went back in and applied the letter J in various places. For example, Julius Caesar wasn't originally called Julius. We kind of modernized that name. And same with Jerusalem was called Yerusalem, not J. So in the book of Job, for example, was the book of IOB. And when it comes to the name Jesus, it's more interesting than that. Because in the Latin, you'll see I-E-S-U-S a lot. And then they substituted the I with the J, and then today we pronounce that as Jesus. But originally, I do not think it was pronounced that way at all. The Meyer material says the individual's name was Emmanuel. But what's been handed down to us is kind of a transliteration of the term Iesus. Now, Gian Giorgio Trissino was an Italian scholar in 1550 who first invented the letter J, and that was what started the process of substituting the letter J for the letter I in many of these ancient documents. I'll give you another example. In the old Renaissance paintings, under the crucifixion, you'll see the letters I-N-R-I a lot. And I know this from art history, one of my degrees, 2 degrees. But I-N-R-I, I've always wondered what that meant. And well, what it means is in Latin, Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iodorium. Iesus, the name that we today call Jesus, Nazarenus Rex Iodorium, Jesus Christ, King of the Jews, is the way we pronounce that and we translate that today. So, and many Christian pastors realize that the original name was not Jesus. That's kind of an anglicized version of what the original name was. Now, there's still a controversy over what the original name of the individual was. For example, some groups say his name was actually Yeshua, and some argue Iesus, and the Meyer material says Emmanuel. So the controversy goes on, and it's mostly an unknown controversy, because people go by the name Jesus, which is based on the letter J, which was not part of the English language in the ancient world. The English language has gone through a couple recreations, a couple of versions. But in any case, that was the Talmud of Emmanuel. That was a way tangent again. We're talking about ancient earth history, even more ancient than the stories from the Bible. Semiasis says, of course, but the earth beings at this time were of the most diverse forms and kinds. In part, they were completely wild creatures of human-like forms, which had been partly exposed to earlier millennia on earth by our ancestors, i.e., their descendants. These descendants of the outcasts were abused by foreign space travelers. This is an interesting point. And these also mated through genetic manipulations with different animal species and witnessed genetically new life forms. I don't have this particular section in my notes with me, but there is, in the Meyer information, it talks about the cherubim and the seraphim that, according to the Meyer information, were actually the animal-human-human-animal hybrids that were made by the Lyrians at the time. And the people were so shocked and disturbed by what they saw, the native earth peoples, the Evas, that they said, hey, this must be an angel. And that's the four living creatures, the seraphim in Revelation chapter 4 that guard the throne of God. The Meyer information says were animal-human hybrids that the Lyrians made. So you can see how confusing some of this stuff is. There's so much of this happened in our past. Our past now is a dumbed-down, kind of diluted story that we have. And we have these giant megalithic structures all over the earth, which scream out to us, hey, there's some very interesting history here that we're not paying attention to. I'm going to take a short break for just a few minutes and play some nature sounds, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. Okay, we're back. I wanted to say hello to all the folks in the chat room. I appreciate all the guests we got. DG, Gail Hawaii, a couple guests, and Eve. I hit you guys with both barrels today. For those of you who are new to this, we're really getting into the weird stuff tonight. So sometimes that happens. Anyway, Semyase, again, who is a woman, I haven't given any background for her. Semyase is a Plearan woman. The Plearan were originally called the Pleiadians, which was an incorrect term, because they're not from our Pleiades. They're from another star system, some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. They live in a different space-time configuration. They're extremely advanced people. They have not had war for 50,000 years. They're in a stage of evolution called the fifth stage of evolution. There are seven evolutionary steps that human races go through. We here down on the Earth, most of us are in stage two still, and we're trying to climb up to stage three, which would make us officially an intelligent race. The Plearan are living in something called creational wisdom, just before they lose the need for a physical body. So they're much older than us spiritually, and they only come to Earth here to give us this teaching in the hopes that we won't destroy ourselves as we've done in the past. And they also want to undo some of the damages that their ancestors did to us. So let's continue here. In part, they were completely wild creatures, this is Semyase speaking, of human-like forms, which have been partly exposed to earlier millennia on Earth by our ancestors, i.e. their descendants. These descendants of the outcasts were abused by foreign space travelers, and these also mated through genetic manipulation with different animal species and witnessed genetically new life forms. One of these, by the way, is the ape that is still known today, which represents a human-animal mutation. Namely, the Pan Paniscus, the Bonobo, the dwarf chimpanzee, which is an animal-human mutation. Thus, the ape being is descended from the human being, not vice versa. Other ape beings resulted from natural evolution in the hominoid line. Your researchers and scientists have already found many intermediate mutations between human beings and ape beings, but usually only as skeletons or partial skeletons. These intermediate mutations, part human being, part ape being, are known to the people under names such as Africanus, Peking Man, the Neanderthal, etc. Four different kinds of these have survived over past millennia, and their descendants still live today, but to be sure, no longer in large hordes, rather only in very isolated areas. And then he goes on and he talks about the Yetis and these Evas, who were the leftover humanoids. And then they talk about, again, Semyase talks about some of these beings were 12 meters tall. And these were partially created by genetic manipulation. That's around 35 feet tall. Let me continue here. Their appearance was also very different. Many of them kinds were only remotely reminiscent to human forms. One let them die out or killed when they became too vicious. They often hid themselves in far remote areas and survived for thousands of years, since their average age was about 1,500 years. We had giants that lived on the earth that lived over 1,000 years at a time, and they hid. This was, let me read here. But the last of the vicious ones, whose life was ended by force, died a little more than 230,000 years ago. And they go on here and they talk about the Cyclops, the one-eyed giants, the Titans, they're called, and the giants that were called Goliath, that were used for the purposes of war. And continue. Anyway, this is Contact Report 7. And if you go to the Future of Mankind site, you can read this for yourself. It's incredibly long. it talks about a lot of other stuff than what I've just talked about. It's, if you print it out, it'll be about 25 pages long. And that's the way the Meyer information goes. It's just astounding how much information that there really is. I'm going to take us back in time a little bit. I'm going to talk about Sloth Asket. I'm going to talk about the Giza Intelligences. And I'm not going to play clips. I had some clips. I'll probably save those for Revolution Radio tonight, freedomslips.com, 8 p.m. Eastern, Studio B, if you want to hear more about this crazy stuff. I'm going to be joined by Barbara DeLong, who's another radio show host that has an interest in this material as well. Anyway, let me step us back in time. I started giving the overview a little bit at the beginning of the show because we've gone so far down the rabbit hole that I think you got to come out sometimes and get grounded again. Billy, he's in his late 70s. He lives in this tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti, and he's written over 40 books, and he's written thousands of bulletins and contact reports like the ones I just read you. These writings answer all the big questions in life, as you can see. Who are we? Where do we come from? What's happened in our history? What's the purpose of our life? And that's kind of what I want to dial in on now. What is the purpose of our life? Because the Meyer material explains that every human has something called a spirit form. And the spirit form is almost like a tiny fragment of the universal consciousness. There is a universal consciousness. It's not a heavenly father, as our religions say. It's more of an impersonal spiritual energy. Now, it's impersonal because it really has no personality. It's a superintelligence. It builds universes as a part of its own evolution. Our ancestors called it God, and there were extraterrestrials who came to the earth in ancient times, and they confused these extraterrestrials with the creator of the universe, and sometimes they called these extraterrestrials God. Now, the Meyer material does never use the term God anymore because it's become a term related to this misunderstanding, this confusion. Your spirit form, you could think of as a fragment of this universal consciousness. It creates spirit forms. Why? Because spirit forms help the universal consciousness evolve. And the way they do this is by living many, many lifetimes. Millions. We live for 40 to 60 million years before we evolve where we don't need a physical body. We reincarnate for 40 to 60 million years. Most human spirits on this earth are only 4 to 5 million years old. Now, we are intentionally, the way the nature does this is at our earlier stages of evolution, 4 to 5 million years, 8 to 12 million years, there are some people on the earth that are 8 to 12 million years old in their spirit forms. They've lived many, many material lifetimes. Those are the people that were part of these civilizations in the ancient past. But most spirit forms here on the earth are 4 to 5 million years old. Now, your body, of course, we'd only live about 100 years or 80 years, and then we die. And the spirit form comes out of the body, and it goes and it takes the material consciousness with it. And this, the consciousness goes into an area of the spiritual realm called the overall consciousness block. And in that overall consciousness block, what are processed are your previous life memories, which are turned into their essences. The essence of wisdom or patience or love or hope, all these important things that you learned in this lifetime. And that information is transferred to your spirit, and your spirit is strengthened, and it becomes wiser. So the next time it goes into a material lifetime, it's a little more prepared, and it will evolve. It will continue to slowly evolve up this ladder through these material lifetimes. Now, when the spirit form comes back into the body of the child, it does this at 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg, and it brings with it a new material consciousness. But what it retains from the old is the memories of the predecessor personalities. So locked away in your subconscious are the memories of your predecessor personalities. Now, how they manifest at our current level of evolution is that you'll have a knowing. You'll feel guided to go a certain way. You'll feel guided to do certain things. And you should follow those impulses. They come from your creational nature. Now, the mentality of the child has to physically grow up again. But again, in the evidence of this subconscious wisdom, one of the evidences I bring forward are the children who are virtuosos that can play instruments incredibly. The reason they can is because that information is subconscious. When you learn to play like that, it's not a conscious thinking, because you practice things so many times that it goes into the subconscious. And that subconscious, those subconscious memories, they manifest. But when we're alive, we'll also be impulsed by our predecessor personalities. We get these impulses, which are like signals. We also get signals from the planetary storage banks and the universal storage banks. Now, Billy, when he was very young, was very, very sensitive to the impulses, the signals that come from the universe, from these universal storage banks. And there's this wonderful writing. It's called How It All Began, when Billy describes how he first experienced the oneness of the universe. And that's why I started the show out talking about the oneness of the universe. The whole universe is a oneness which flows through all things, all existence, and all life. And Billy described it this way. He crawled out a lower bedroom window. He went outside. It was a warm night in May. Sat on the bench and looked up at the beautiful starry sky. And he said profound things like, "My life exists because of the love of creation." And he heard his own voice say, "Since ancient times, I lived among the stars." And he said incredible things like, "The love of creation connects all life, because in all life, that love lies hidden." And he saw those beautiful stars, and he knew his purpose in his life. He was filled with these good memories, and he sensed that there was an invisible light that he called the love of creation. And shortly after that, he started having his first contacts with a man named Sva, who was a 900-year-old extraterrestrial human from the Plearian race, who eventually landed his ship in Bulak, where Billy was growing up. And Billy would go into the ship, and they would go high above the Earth, and Billy would see the beautiful blue world that we call Earth, and he would see the screens where Sva'th was watching all these people. It's interesting that we call extraterrestrials the Watchers. And it's not that they're angels, and it's not that they're demons. They're just higher evolved human beings which are watching our evolution. And one of the reasons they had contact with Billy is because they can monitor spirit forms, and they can recognize spirit forms. They have the technology to do that. And they understand that his spirit form incarnates as a teacher. And they've seen it on the earth before. They've seen this same spirit form in this man from Switzerland. incarnate is Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, who we described earlier, and Muhammad. In each lifetime, it teaches an ancient universal teaching called the Teaching of the Spirit that talks about certain creational natural laws. This is not about a Heavenly Father. These are about laws of nature. And these laws of nature deal first with love. And the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation, because creation radiates love, so that every point and every place you can experience the radiating love of creation. Love is the highest principle in creation, and everything follows that principle in absolute logic, except man, who can turn away. And for that individual that turns away from love, the world will be a very negative place. And we need to live our life according to the law of love, which says live and help live. And love is about a wisdom condition observation. It's called Empfindung in the German, which is a fine, sensitive feeling. Because nature radiates this fine, sensitive feeling if you're open to it. And there's a beautiful passage in one of Billy's writings called The Goblet of Truth, which says something to the effect that rivers, stones, lakes, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms live many, many lives, and they're connected by these psychic vibrations, by these swinging waves. There's a swinging wave that goes throughout nature. And you can see nature using the swinging wave in the way the birds move together as a unit suddenly, back and forth, because they're all connected. And all people, we don't realize this, are also connected by these swinging electromagnetic waves that come from the spirit form. See, you have a spiritual consciousness. Your spirit form, your gamut, it's called the gamut in the spirit form, controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. And they send this electromagnetic wave, this energy, to the psyche. The psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of your material consciousness. These electromagnetic waves strengthen you, and they will help you in your perceptive ability. So all of nature is an indissoluble web of life. And Semyase described it this way. She said, wisdom and love go together, and the creation and its laws are wisdom and love at the same time. So I talked about at the beginning of the show the source of the oneness of the universe. Well, the universe, responds to our positive thoughts and feelings into the positive word pronounced, and indeed in an equally directed wise, consequently a positive reaction takes place. So if you think neutral positive, the source of the oneness of the universe responds in a positive way to that. And that is part of the teaching of the Spirit, is that we have to control our thoughts, because good thoughts lead to good feelings, which lead to good habits and good circumstances in your life. By the same token, bad thoughts will lead to bad feelings. So if you're getting bad feelings, correct your thinking. Boy, I go through a lot of too many bad feelings in the day, so my thoughts are not what they need to be. Take a look at your own. We sow these weeds in our consciousness, and these weeds can grow, and these weeds can lead to all sorts of self-induced miseries, which are completely unnecessary, because your good thoughts can lead to good feelings, and good circumstances in your life. You are the master of your own destiny. And let me give you a couple quick meditative sentences that will help you when your thoughts are running out of control and you can't bring them back into line. One of them goes this way: I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. And that's what we're trying to do with the might of thoughts. We're trying to gain might over ourselves. Because the second, another creational natural law is the law of harmony. And if you maintain harmony in your mind, in your psyche, then you can be blessed and you will be blessed. By the same token, if you don't maintain harmony, there will be suffering in your life. Another creational natural law is the law of striving. You have to keep working. You have to keep improving yourself. You have to keep working at your day job, or your hobbies, or whatever you have at this point in your life. You must continue to strive. That's a creational natural law. You can't be happy unless you're striving. There are no happy lazy people. At least they're not happy. They may be happy for a little while, but laziness breeds unhappiness. And there are these laws: the law of love, the law of striving, and the law of harmony. And if you live your life with these laws, you'll have great peace. If your thoughts get out of control, use the meditative sentences. Here's another one: everything is achievable for me. I master whatever I accomplish. Everything is achievable for me. I master whatever I accomplish. Everything is achievable for me. I master whatever I accomplish. You see, what you're doing by saying those words over and over again, you're bringing not only your conscious thoughts into control, but your subconscious thoughts and your unconscious thoughts. Because we actually have unconscious thoughts and subconscious thoughts, and those actually can cause wreak havoc in our lives as well. So these are just some of the teaching, the spiritual teachings in the Meyer case. I wanted to kind of go over those very, very quickly. We were talking about the dwarves, 50-centimeter people, and some of the giants that lived on the earth in the ancient past. Well, let me reel back time about 115,000 years ago. The Earth was very different. The North Pole was actually a very warm place. There was, I think, a mantle over our Earth, or a firmament, it's sometimes called, a cloud covering. There was something that allowed our planet to absorb warmth in a different way. And we weren't tilted on the axis the same way we are now. The area of Florida was actually in the North Polar regions. And the Northern Pole regions was the best climate on the Earth. This is about 115,000 years ago. This area is called Hyperborea. Well, this was during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. Atlantis and Lemuria started about 133,000 years ago. Atlant came here with his wife, Caryatide, and they developed this island continent. They built these beautiful structures on this large island that existed somewhere between South America and Europe in that area. And a very advanced culture came into existence. Many of these people were from nearby stars. And the city of Lemuria, or Mu, was built in the area that is now a desert, Gobi Desert. And these two groups decided to live apart to avoid war. Well, I started out talking about Hyperborea, which is this area in the north, and there were Hyperboreans living in that area. The Hyperboreans had been here for about 180,000, 190,000 years. So you can almost think of them as a Earth people at that point. They'd been here so long. They were a blonde people, and they were living in those northern regions. Well, a man came here called Eris the Barbarian, and he came from Beta Centauri, which is many light years away, I think hundreds of light years away. I'd have to double check. And don't confuse Beta Centauri with Alpha Centauri, Alpha Centauri B, Proxima Centauri, and all that. Beta Centauri is very far away. Eris the Barbarian came here and conquered Hyperborea. He was what they call a king of wisdom, but he was not a studier of the spiritual materials. He was unbalanced in that sense. That's why they called him the Barbarian. He also had a very high-ranking scientist with him called Semyasa. Semyasa was one of the earlier incarnations of a man named Quetzal, which is one of Billy's contacts. But in this ancient times, he was a great scientist still, but he got involved in something that was very taboo to these extraterrestrials. He mated with one of these Evas I was talking about earlier, and the offspring they called Adam. And that's where we got our story of Adam and Eve, which is very interesting. If you study the story of Adam and Eve, you realize that there's a lot of information left out. Because if Adam and Eve had sons, Cain and Abel, and Cain kills Abel, before you know it, Cain is taking a wife. Wait a minute, there's only supposed to be three people on the earth, and building a city for who? Well, either there were a whole lot of sons and daughters of Adam and Eve that we didn't hear about who mated with each other and had incest, or there were other peoples on the earth, which makes a lot more logical sense to me. Anyway, that there were, and this happened many, many, many years ago, about 115,000, 130,000 years ago. This was Atlantis and Lemuria. And I'll kind of try to give you the fast forward of Atlantis and Lemuria very, very quickly, because it's, you could do two or three shows on Atlantis and Lemuria. Hyperborea was conquered by Eris the Barbarian. Eris' son, Aaron, went into Pakistan, conquered Pakistan and India. Eris had a scientist, Quetzal. Quetzal violated some of the rules of Eris. Among other things, mated with an earth woman, an Eva. Again, these were the descendants of the celestial sons who had been here even before Atlantis and Lemuria. In addition, Quetzal and his entourage did some genetic manipulations, which ended up in these incredible giants that we were talking about that existed for quite some time on the Earth. Eris also continued to stir up trouble between Atlantis and Lemuria. There was something about these people from Beta Centauri who had an incredible, they held grudges. They really had it out for the Atlanteans and Lemurians. But in any case, the Great War started between Atlantis and Lemuria. The Atlanteans melted the city of Mu to the ground. They had all of these flying ships with these special heat weapons, these ray weapons that would just melted the city to the ground. And many of the Lemurians were killed. Some of them went underground. There was two underground cities under Lemuria, Agartha Alpha and Agartha Beta. They were connected by tunnels. some of the Lemurians did escape to space, to free space, where they came up with a plan. And they took their ships and attached them to a rather large asteroid. Now, this asteroid was a fragment of a planet that existed in our solar system called Melona. And Melona actually had life on it, as did Mars in our ancient past. But anyway, they took this fragment of Melona, brought it back to the Earth, and aimed it at Atlantis, the island continent. And it came into our atmosphere with this incredible, this gigantic asteroid. And it just caught fire as it contacts our atmosphere. And it just makes this howling sound as it is entering our atmosphere. And the Atlanteans are celebrating their victory. And they look up and they see this gigantic missile approaching them. And it gets to a certain height in our atmosphere. And it just explodes into many, many pieces. And these fireballs go everywhere. Where there are two major pieces of the asteroid left, and they smash into the Atlantic Ocean, go all the way down, slam into the floor of the ocean, and cause this gigantic earthquake. And they also tear the seabed apart, and up comes magma. So this causes like an explosion to occur, so to speak, in the waters, and this column of water shoots up for thousands and thousands of feet, and it creates a gigantic wave which just engulfs Atlantis. And Atlantis had a capital which was shaped like a starship. It had a dome over it. It was completely crushed, and everyone in Atlantis was destroyed. Now, the interesting bit of this story is that the Atlanteans are still here, because all those people that died have reincarnated here on the Earth at later times. Because the planet that you die on is the planet that you reincarnate on. So, anyway, we'll continue this story on Revolution Radio at about 8 p.m. Eastern, freedomslips.com. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good evening.